Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So this has been a nice week. We haven't done anything exciting, but the weather has been nice.
It has been.
In fact, I hope you enjoyed spring this week because summer is coming. It's supposed to be in the 80s later this week, which for some of my friends who live down south, that's called spring. Upper 80s.
That's totally spring.
Yeah, in Texas, that's Texas spring.
Yeah.
Texas spring is like between 85 and 95.
Yeah.
With lightning from the sky. But the thunderstorms. Texas thunderstorms.
They're not really a spring thing, especially, I guess.
Well, they must have summer now because all of my friends who live in Texas are talking about thunderstorms tonight as we record this. So, the weather has turned. We've had a run of nice weather. May was this long slog of cold, rainy, dreary.
So was April.
Days. And so was April was worse. But finally, the weather has turned. We have some nice weather. I'm so happy. The forecast looks good. It's going to be a good week. And in fact, you're planning to take the kids out for another stealth homeschooling field trip.
Yes.
A low impact, low contact field trip.
Right. It's either going to be to the Cape Cod Canal, which is my first choice, but I haven't actually checked their website to make sure that the parking lot is open.
Right.
And if Cape Cod Canal isn't open, then we'll go to Daniel Webster Wildlife Sanctuary, because I noticed that the Massachusetts Audubon Society has opened it now.
Yes, well, they must have opened it for their 24-hour birdathon that just completed.
Probably.
Yeah.
In fact, I've noticed, I know it's open because I noticed that I joined a Facebook group for Southeastern Massachusetts birders.
Birders.
Yes, and some of them, people in the group, have been posting pictures from Daniel Webster. So
bird nerds.
Yes, totally.
I read the funniest column in the Boston Globe tonight at dinner. Read it aloud from my favorite Boston Globe reporter, Billy Baker. If you know a reporter by their name for how well they write, that's pretty good. So it was hysterical to him talking about becoming a birder.
It was pretty funny.
It was pretty funny. So I'll try to remember to put a link in the show notes for that. So, Cape Cod Canal, I think that's run by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
It is.
So it's a federal thing, so it might be open. It would not necessarily be under the state orders, but the state's opening the recreation areas, too. So
right, but it's...
It's who knows?
They all still, stuff I mean, they still have to follow state...
State guidelines.
Guidelines.
Yeah, that's true, that's true. Yeah, we'll see. I will not be joining you. I have recording to do, but...
Alas.
Working on Memorial Day. But that's the podcaster life. It's glamorous at times, but it's a slog.
I miss the glamour. I think I blinked.
So what else are we doing? All right. So that's the future, which is your past. But because by the time you listen to us, that will have happened. But the past, we the past past. I mentioned before how I was doing this Scouting Merit Badge course online.
Yes.
And how I was trepidatious about it.
Right.
And it wasn't sure whether. So it's completed. It was 4 weeks long. The deadline for the boys, because it was all boys, to get their stuff in.
No girls.
There were no girls this time. The deadline for the boys to get their stuff in was Friday. So, of course, I was receiving emails today.
Today. Of course.
Of course.
It's only 2 days late.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it's not like it's real school. It's just merit badge. Come
it's
on.
It's just merit badges. So, how did it go? It went okay. It was my first time doing merit badge counseling, my first time doing merit badge course, which is a little different from the one-on-one counseling. You're running a group of kids through the merit badge on an accelerator basis, on a scheduled basis. And it went okay. It was digital technology. I felt like that was kind of in my wheelhouse, so that might be the thing to do. I found Google Classroom to be a little opaque to use. I feel bad for all the teachers who are having to do all of their teaching through it right now. It was okay. I mean, it worked. It worked out. About half the kids didn't submit any work and barely showed up. They were faceless names in the Zoom meeting every week. So, you know, they never turned their video on and never said anything. So who knows if they were even there. Would I do it again? Yeah, I might do a different merit badge. This was kind of hard to do, this very technical merit badge. I thought it might be easier, but it was actually harder to do. I'm not sure I'd want to do like rope tying, like pioneering. That might be even harder to demonstrate tying knots. But I got some other ones.
Tying knots via
Zoom. Yeah. It would be hard to show that. So I'm thinking what was like other ones like cooking would be ridiculous to try to do. I mean, I suppose you could teach stuff and let them go do the cooking. You can't do the cooking. But I have a couple other merit badges that I'm qualified to teach. So, you know, I might do it again, not right away, but it might. I'd rather do the one on one.
Right.
Or one on two. You're supposed to have, you know, always two people there when you're with a kid.
Right.
But even online. So I think that would work much better. So I'm hoping that we can do some more of that and get some troops encouraging kids to reach out. So that was the end of the merit badge course. Meanwhile, the girls, Bella and Sophie, we've signed them both up for an astronomy merit badge with their assistant scoutmaster who's leading it. So that should help out a bit.
Right.
They'll be doing it the same way, the remote via Zoom thing. We'll see how that works.
We will see.
We will see. We will report back on that. So the other thing that happened is, you know, if you've listened to this podcast any length of time, you know how much we love our farmer's market. The Hingham Farmers Market in Hingham, Massachusetts. They're the nicest people. Everyone, the people who run it, the people who go, the people who are the vendors. They're just the nicest people. And we miss them over the winter when we can't see them, and we love going back. And they know us. They've seen our kids grow up from little tykes. Like Bella, like some of the kids weren't even born when we first started going. And I mean, most of them, actually. It was just Sophie and Bella when we first started going. So they've restarted the farmer's market. It's different.
Very.
What did you think? I mean, so how'd it go? Like,
well, okay. So on the one hand, yay, it's better than nothing.
Yes.
On the other hand, socially distanced farmer's market is not really the same thing as the farmer's
market.
It's
not nearly as satisfying.
So this is how it works. You pre-order your food.
From each vendor
online. Yes. On their individual websites.
During the week.
And then you get in your car and
we had
a time slot assigned to us. So basically the first half of the alphabet got 9:30 to 10:30 and the second half of the alphabet got 10:30 to 11:30.
Yes.
So you had to show up during your time slot,
which was good because we usually like to go earlier anyway.
Yeah. I'm glad that we have your last name as opposed to my last name, because if you know, Scott would be
in
the second
half. I've spent my life being first for things.
I spent my life being last for things. So it's kind of nice to be in the first half of the alphabet
now.
There
you go.
Yay.
Unless you don't like getting up early.
Well, there's that. In any case, so when we got there, they had it not at the beach parking lot, but the secondary parking lot.
By the train station.
By the train station, which is where they have it when the beach parking lot is busy. So it's their sort of secondary location.
But this made it, the reason they switched it was because it allowed for flow. And that's important. Right.
Okay, so basically nobody got out of the cars.
Yes.
You drive, it was a drive-through farmer's market.
You drive in the entrance. They check you in. Basically, they check you. They make sure you have to have a sign in your window with your name and which vendors you're stopping at.
And and you have you have to have been signed up to pick stuff up with one of the vendors.
Yep.
At least. Then you drive through. Each vendor had their own tents and tables set up, all like a good 12 feet away from each other.
Yeah. It's stations. And there was only like five, six, seven of them.
I thought there were eight.
It might have been eight. Okay.
There were eight vendors there.
It was very fewer than most. Right.
Usually there's at least two or three times that many.
Oh, like there's like 30. Right.
And there were none of the like vendors that sold like
pottery or
hand knits or bags or any of that jewelry.
Yeah.
Those people were not there.
These were just the just the almost like you'd say the tent pole vendors. So there was four farms, one meat vendor, two meat vendors, the poultry and pork vendor and the beef vendor.
Right. And the poultry lady also sells eggs. So we usually buy at least eggs from her.
And two seafood vendors.
Right.
Which it's New England.
It's New England.
Our farmers markets have seafood, including lobster. The tricky thing was, we didn't know what was going to happen. So we ordered from one farmer, the one guy we see every week who knows us after years, the one seafood guy who is the nicest guy, Tom from Jordan Brothers, who has given popsicles, lollipops to our kids forever.
Okay, that was actually one of the things that made me really sad was we got to see Tom. We had to say hi to Tom even because he handed the mussels in through the car window. But he didn't have lollipops for the kids. And I mean,
you could tell it felt awkward for him.
Yeah, he always gives us exactly five lollipops. And I was sad.
Right.
That Tom didn't have lollipops for us. Not that, I mean, I understand. Not that I'm blaming him.
Right. It's just sad that the situation is such.
This is how it is. It's the way it is. And it's sad.
Yeah. Well, the other thing was with the Copycat Farms with Elizabeth, the poultry, the lady we get the eggs from, they're the best eggs. We have talked about that before. You had to order on their website, like I said, but you could only order on their website if you had ordered from them on their website before because they're in such high demand.
Right.
And we'd only ever bought stuff from her at the market. So I couldn't enter our email. And you told me to.
I said you should email her.
I felt that I felt weird. I'm like, hey, you know us? Can we skip the way you keep out the hoi polloi and let us in because we're special? And I felt weird.
Elizabeth always says hi, guys, and is always excited to see us. I did not think that this would be a problem. In fact,
she was excited.
She did. She saw us. She ran over to the van. She was like, hi, guys. It's so good to see you.
And she's like, do I have something for you? And I'm like, no, you didn't have our email. And she's like, oh, send me an email. And let me know. I'll put you on the list.
Yes, I told you.
I know.
Anyway, but we got to see her. It was nice to see her.
Right. And the kids, the kids are in the back of the van with the windows are kind of dark. And they're like, are the kids with you? Yes, they're here. Like when we drove in, the volunteer, I don't even remember her name, the volunteer for the helps around the market.
Yes.
She's like jumping up and down. The Bettinellis are here. It was funny. I mean, us coming is as much a ritual of the spring, coming to the market as us going to the market. I think for them, you know, it's a sign that the market has begun, that the Bettinellis show up because we were as regular as clockwork going to the market.
And I don't think there's any other family with five kids who comes to the market.
We are the big Catholic family that goes. Right. So, yeah. So we stopped at Tom, we stopped to say hi to Elizabeth. We didn't get anything from her. And then, Tom handed through the window because it was just a bag with, we got mussels and scallops from them. The other ones, they opened up the back of the van and put the stuff in, which was fine. They loaded the van. And Oakdale, that's what they did. We, besides the vegetables, we also bought plants.
Yeah. So he had a nice, they had beautiful cardboard boxes for the vegetables. And so everyone
was prepacked.
Prepacked cardboard boxes with your name on it. And so they just grabbed the box that belonged to you and put it in the car. And then they had a checklist with the potted plants. And so they just grabbed the potted plants out of the truck.
Right.
And stuck them in a flat and put them in the back of the car.
Yes. It worked out. We were through there in 15 minutes. I mean, it was the fastest farmer's market ever.
Yeah.
It was sad, and then you drive out and.
I mean, usually May is pretty fast because there's not a whole lot there.
It's New England.
So our box of vegetables had kale, baby spinach.
Yep.
Spring mix.
Yeah. Spring mix. Lettuce,
radishes.
Yeah. Radishes.
And asparagus.
Yes, that's pretty much.
That's it.
That's pretty much it. You know what? Oh, I kind of miss is fiddleheads.
Yeah, there's only ever one year there was a guy who had fiddleheads.
Yeah, I know. But, well, a few times, but fiddleheads were.
No, it was only the one year.
All right. Well, okay. Yeah. I remember differently, but that's
it was,
okay.
It was, yeah.
So,
the dreadlock hippie guy.
Yeah, there's usually like something. I wonder if the mushroom vendor was going to come back. I don't know, but there's usually a couple others. The lady from Pan de Vignon, the bakery, the bread bakery, wasn't there. I didn't expect her to be. She comes up all the way up from the Cape, and even if it's going to be rainy, she doesn't come. You know what I mean? Right. Just like that has to be a good market for them to come all the way up. And
it's a long way to drive to not sell very much.
Right. So I understand that. It's sad, but understandable. And some of the other vendors, I'm a little worried about Second Nature Farm because they're not even listed. And I'd love to talk to Mark, the market president, whether they're coming back because they've had some changes of recent years. And
I wonder if they've just decided to stick to the CSA instead of doing the market.
It could be. Well, that's what I was reading about in the paper today was how all these local farms are going gangbusters. They're selling out. They can't grow food fast enough
to
sell it.
People are home and cooking.
Well, they're home and cooking. They're not wanting to go to the grocery store. Grocery stores don't have everything they want in many cases.
Right.
They like the idea of shopping local everyone's thinking buy local, order food from local restaurants and, you know, to be delivered. And so that's in people's mind and that's what they're doing.
And I love it. I mean, I'm happy for our farmers that they're getting more customers than ever.
Yes.
Because we don't want our farmers to shut down.
I want more farmers.
We want more farmers.
Yeah.
So this is really great on the whole.
Yeah. And farms around here tend to be much more diverse in what they grow because they're trying. It limits their risk. Thank you. If any particular crop dies, they still have plenty else. If they were just growing one thing and something happened to that crop.
So it's not monoculture.
Right. So they have a pretty diverse offerings that usually so it's really great and I want more farms. You know, I was just thinking of, I wonder about the couple who sells the pears, the Asian pears, Jerry
and his wife.
I hope they're okay. I wonder if we'll even see them this fall when
I hope so. I love Jerry and his pears.
I want things to get better. I want to go back to life anyway. So farmers market, and then today we finally got around to planting our garden.
Yes. Well,
we built the garden bed.
We were kind of waiting for the plants from the market.
Right. We ordered small plants from the farmer's market, tomatoes, cucumbers, rooming lettuce,
zucchini, eggplant. No, I got the eggplants at
You got eggplant and cherry tomatoes from the other place, the nursery.
Yeah, I went to, there's a new nursery in town, and I went and checked them out, and I bought some cherry tomatoes and eggplants and bell peppers.
Bell peppers, yep.
And what else did I get? Oh, a watering can.
And a watering can, which we needed.
We needed.
I also picked up some tomato cages, which we needed.
Oh, I got those from Tractor Supply.
Tractor Supply, which I really want to go to. I'm really excited by the Tractor Supply. I don't know why, but I'm inordinately excited by the idea of Tractor Supply.
It was fun.
I want to buy some feed.
It was a fun outing. I got to go to two new stores that I'd never been to before.
By yourself.
By myself. It was kind of fun.
So I got sidetracked there. Oh, so we plant, those are all things. Then we also planted sugar snap peas and green beans.
Right.
Yes.
And some radishes.
And radishes, yes. So that's all in. It'll be interesting to see how it grows. We haven't had a garden in a long time.
It's been a few years.
We've mentioned before that we used to have a garden when the kids were little. Then they got a certain age and became, we had the tomato blight, and then the kids got a certain age and it would just be with something we didn't do. But this year I was bound and determined. We Anthony and I, and then the other kids, we built it, the raised garden bed. I bought the dirt. We shoveled it all in. Actually, that went really quickly. We talked about that too. Then we finally got the compost in. Yesterday, I think
Anthony and I put the compost in.
That's right. And then we got the planting done. So just in time. I mean, I can imagine for a lot of people, like who live in more warmer climes, thinking it's the end of May. You should have had this stuff in like a month and a half ago. No.
Actually, we're only like a week past our last frost date.
Yes.
So we are not actually running late, though it seems like we are.
Right. You could get stuff in the ground if you take frost precautions, like a lot of the farms do. They have, hoop shelters that go over the small plants and that sort of stuff.
Right. Cold frames.
Yes. We could do that in the future, but this year was just, let's get it in the ground and see if it works.
Yeah. And we don't start anything from seeds because, like, inside, because we do not have space for that.
We did that one time.
One year we did.
We had little tomato seedlings everywhere on every flat surface, which we don't have flat surfaces anymore.
No, that was, you know, like 3 kids ago.
Yes. Yeah, that was something, getting that.
It was fun. It was an adventure.
It was awesome to grow our own plants, like from seed, our tomatoes.
It was, but we just don't have the space.
If we had the space. My cousin, we talked before, my cousin is a tomato fanatic. He grows like 50 different varieties. He has this farm in his backyard. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
And we saw the pictures of it last year. I wonder how he's doing this year. But yeah, he grows everything from seed, and for him, this is a major hobby. So in the ground, we'll hopefully be eating food we've grown very soon. It would be nice. Speaking of eating, among our farmer's market haul, we had mussels.
Yes.
And scallops and the asparagus. So we had that Saturday night. So for the mussels, I think, I don't think I mentioned before. So we do the mussels, fairly simple. For one thing.
The French way.
Yes. I should have doubled it. Right.
We should have bought twice as much mussels.
I don't know what I was thinking.
But so they were good. They were really good.
It's you cook it in a broth of like a tomatoey broth, tomato, wine. Like, so I use the canned fire roasted diced tomatoes. You can make it with fresh tomatoes, which is really good. But this was the second best good. Some white wine, garlic, onion. Trying to think of everything else that was in it.
Mushrooms. We did mushrooms.
Oh, yeah. I added mushrooms this time. The recipe doesn't call for them, but it's...
they were so good. Mushrooms good and wine is always good.
All we had were the store-bought, like the Baby Bellas. But I would have totally loved to get some forage, like some local... Some forage mushrooms, so the morels or chanterelles or even chestnuts would have been really good in it.
Yeah.
So it's onion, garlic. You could add saffron. It wasn't white wine; it was red wine. That's what it was. Mussels, and it was good. And you made a really nice loaf of bread.
Yeah, I made a nice sourdough, whole wheat with rye, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. When we ordered the mussels from the farmer's market on Wednesday or Thursday or whatever it was, I said, if we're going to make mussels, we need some nice crusty bread to dip in the mussel sauce. So before we went to the market on Saturday morning, I mixed up a loaf of bread and had it rising while we were gone.
Yeah, that was really good because you need the bread to sop up the amazing liquid. And because we were a little worried that it wouldn't be enough, because when we saw the little bag of mussels, we're like, we need some more food. We made some pasta, which it doesn't call for pasta, but served over pasta actually worked out really well.
Right. Yeah, and so we had the asparagus, and I got a butternut squash from the grocery store, and so we had that too.
Yeah. That was really good. That was a good dinner. And then, of course, scallops. The scallops I do as a pan sear, a saute. So I always slice them in half because the sea scallops are always quite thick. And it's just in oil first in the pan, both sides. And then you add butter and wine. So you put butter in to cook and take them out, and then you add wine to it. You can even add like lime juice or lemon juice or even orange juice to kind of, I added lemon juice to it.
I like lemon to
give it some flavor. And then just very simple like that. And then I add a little more butter to get it a little silkier.
It's always good.
Yes. And then pour it over. Oh man. That tastes
a lot of times
good.
We do it served with mushrooms and onions, but because the mushrooms were in the mussels, we didn't do the
right. I just wanted to keep it simple. It would be good. It'd be good with shallots too.
Oh yeah. Very good.
Yeah. So that was good. Then there was another dish we made this week. This was another sort of last minute, make it up as you go along, which was the teriyaki chicken kebabs.
That was so good. So we had chicken breast in the freezer, and I was just kind of staring at it going,
I don't want to make curry. I don't want to cook on the stove. I don't want to open the oven.
I do not want to turn on the oven. I do not want to turn on the stove. I do not want to stand here. And
spring and summer's my time on the grill.
Right. I was totally just having one of those moments of I do not want to deal with dinner. And Dom, like, manfully stepped up to the plate and came up with this awesome recipe.
Well, ever since we'd made the teriyaki chicken a couple weeks ago, I had this like 2 cups of teriyaki sauce left over from that. And I've been thinking, what can I use that for? What can I do with that? And so as soon as she said that, I said, well, what about, how would we cook the chicken on the grill? Like, you got to be careful cooking chicken breast because it could dry out. I want something a little more interesting than just grilled chicken breast. So I said, what about chicken teriyaki kebabs? And then I'm like, how about chicken teriyaki kebabs with pineapple juice? So a Hawaiian teriyaki chicken. And the key is, so we had vegetables. So we had the red pepper, mushroom. You can tell we like mushrooms, onion, and pineapple, the canned pineapple, and the chicken. The key here is keep the vegetables separate from the meat because they cook at different rates.
I mean, it looks really pretty when you have all the veggies and the meat on one skewer. And
I think the skewers with just the veggies look
pretty. Well, they do look really pretty, but I mean, I like the look.
Yes, it looks great, but it doesn't cook great. So I skewered up all of the veggies, cooked those first on the grill, and then got those off and set them aside, and then skewered up all. I ordered more skewers so I don't have to keep re-skewering everything because we only had like 6 skewers and that wasn't enough.
Not nearly enough.
So then I put the chicken on and then started basting it with the teriyaki sauce as it went. And then I kind of the teriyaki sauce had pineapple juice from the can of pineapples in it. That was one of the keys. And then it was a little thin, so I put the pot on the grill and let it boil down a bit. And then use that at the end as a glaze.
Nice.
And that's what I think gave it that real.
Oh my gosh, it was so good.
It was really good. Yeah. That was, and that, what else did we serve with that? There was something else that was on the plate with that.
Oh, I made that broccoli.
Oh, yeah.
It was a pan roasted broccoli. I got this off of Cook's Illustrated. I wanted like a sesame broccoli. And so I Googled I searched for sesame broccoli. And this one had sesame seeds rather than sesame oil. I was thinking sesame oil, but this had you grind the sesame seeds up with some salt and orange zest, which sounds really weird. And then mix that in with some whole sesame seeds. And you made kind of a
paste. Yeah.
Well, more like a crumble, like a crumble topping. And so then you pan roast the broccoli. You take the broccoli, you put it. You cut it into wedges and
you put the flat side down.
Yeah, you put oil in the pan, flat side down, and then you sprinkle it with water and cover it and let it steam for a few minutes.
Right.
Then you take the lid off.
And you let the water boil away.
You let the water boil away and you crank it up to high. It's on a high heat.
So it chars the broccoli.
So you get a nice good char on it.
Don't be afraid of charring broccoli.
Right. It's,
any cruciferous vegetable like cauliflower broccoli is better when charred.
Right. So you get like a really dark brown, almost black.
Yeah.
And then you flip it.
Don't be afraid.
Flip it. Do the other side. And then you sprinkled the ground sesame seeds on top.
Yeah.
When you plated it.
Yeah. It was good.
And yeah, it didn't taste strongly of orange. In fact, I might actually add double the amount of orange zest in time.
Yeah, it needed more.
But it had just like a kind of really nice sesame orange flavor onto broccoli and didn't overwhelm it. The rationale, according to Cook's Illustrated, was that you get that nice, crunchy, crispy pan sear on the broccoli. You don't want to put a wet sauce on it because then it stops being crunchy.
Yeah.
And so they said they wanted a whole bunch of flavor, but a dry flavor.
Interesting. So almost like putting a rub on, like a dry rub. Interesting.
It was a really interesting dish, and it went really well with the roasted grilled pineapple skewers. Like that orange on the broccoli really popped with the pineapple.
Pineapple is so good grilled. It is so good with direct heat on it.
And honestly, I actually think that I like the canned pineapple grilled better than fresh pineapple grilled.
Yeah, the canned pineapple has had time to break down in the can a little bit. I think that
I was surprised at how well that worked.
Yeah.
On the grill,
like the wedges, like you can. I've grilled pineapple wedges. It's okay, not great, but partly I think also because the pineapple bits in the can are smaller. So there's less surface area. It's hard to get inside that big wedge. So maybe if you cut up a fresh pineapple more, it might work better too.
Maybe.
So that was that dinner. Another Greek dinner was unexpected. So Friday, we had the same situation. It's like, it's 4:30. What should we make? And it's like, we had this whole frozen chunk of salmon and another frozen chunk of white fish.
Right. I said, oh my goodness, I forgot to defrost the fish. How are we?
Because we usually don't buy frozen salmon. Usually buy fresh at the counter.
Our fish counter has been closed, so they basically have frozen fish. Like, all the stuff that would normally be in the counter, they've just been putting out in the case.
Oh, frozen. In these big... It was a big piece.
Gigantic slabs of fish.
Yeah.
So, I bought them.
At least 2 feet long.
Oh, yeah. It was ginormous.
So, we bought them, figuring we defrost it, cook it, you know, like we normally do in the oven.
Right.
But it was late, and so, like, what are we going to do? So I think we're about ordering takeout out. We cannot afford any more takeout.
Right.
So so I'm like, okay, we're gonna make this work. So I thought there's a recipe, this new technique of cooking frozen steaks. You take the frozen steak directly from the freezer, and it has to be a thick steak, and you throw it right on the grill. And you don't think it's gonna work. You think it's gonna burn, but no. 5 to 7 minutes on one side, flip it, 5 to 7 minutes on the other side, put it on the cooler side for another 10 minutes or so, done. Perfect.
Okay, but I don't think that would work with fish.
No. But I'm thinking, if you can cook frozen steak directly from the freezer, you could probably cook frozen fish.
Right.
Not directly on the fire. So, but one of the things you do to cook fish on the grill, you can do is the packet cooking.
Which we've done when camping.
When camping, exactly. It works great over a fire, like a campfire. So we took the big hunk of fish, you and Bella. What did you put on it?
Having been inspired by the orange zest with sesame seeds,
right?
I thought lemon zest with pepper. I'm going to make my own homemade lemon pepper.
Right.
So I just took the zest of a lemon and a whole bunch of peppercorns and some salt, and I buzzed it up in my spice grinder and made like a lemon pepper rub.
Yeah.
For the fish. And I just put that and some olive oil on the fish and then wrapped it up in some heavy-duty aluminum
slices.
With some lemon slices.
Yeah.
And then Bella and I also made a packet of potatoes with some garlic powder and onion powder and oregano.
Surprisingly good.
Oregano, yeah. And salt and pepper and olive oil.
Yep. So I put that on the grill. It took a long time. Yeah, one of the things that you cooked it on the indirect heat side. So I always bank my coals on one side so that I can have direct heat on one side and indirect heat on the other. And I put it only on the indirect side I never put fish over direct heat. And I put the thick, you know how fish tapers? So I put the thick side facing the direct heat, so the thin side away.
That makes sense.
And it took a long time. And I flipped it a couple of times, but I didn't want to flip it too much because it would start to leak out of the seam, right. The foil seam. But, yeah, it took at least a half hour. I'm glad I put extra coals in because I had a feeling this was going to take longer.
Right.
And I thought the potatoes would take longer than they did. They actually cooked really fast because you'd cut them into small enough chunks. So it took a while. The whitefish, we also had a whitefish, which is, I'm not sure it was haddock or something.
I think it was flounder.
Could have been flounder. It wasn't labeled. So it was just whitefish. But it was a lot smaller and thinner. And that was done much faster. But when the salmon was done, it was so, it might have been the best salmon we've ever cooked.
It was really tender.
Yep.
And
yeah, it was the best salmon we've ever made.
It was really good.
It came out so good. I mean, I suppose you could do it in the oven. I mean, it's not about
like the foil.
Yeah, the foil wrap.
But I think that the grill, I mean, it didn't taste super grilled because it was indirect.
Right, it's indirect and there's no smoke getting in there.
But I think it had a slightly grilled flavor.
Okay. I mean, I'm a fan of the grill, and yeah, I mean, there wasn't perfectly sealed, so there would have been smoke getting in. But
what I like most though is that it's not heating up my kitchen.
Yes, that's true. But I mean, in the winter when we want to do salmon, right. It might be a good way to do it. And then finally, I know there's a lot of food talk, but finally tonight now that I think about it, we've been on a citrus kick this week because
we have been.
You had been able to pick up some steak tips the other day at the market. That's because we're just buying what they have available these days. And so we wanted to have a marinade for them. I was going to grill them. And we'd made this marinade a marinade a while ago. And this time I made it again and tweaked it because I knew last time we made it, I had to tweak it. And it is a citrus marinade, which was very interesting. So it's red wine, olive oil, lemon juice, lime juice, orange juice. And then it would have, it called for Italian seasoning, chipotle, ground chipotle pepper. So I did the red wine, the olive oil, 2 tablespoons, like a half a lemon and a half a lime. And before I'd used 1/4 cup of orange juice, but I needed more. So I put the whole orange in, 1/2 cup of orange juice in. And I added the honey this time. The honey wasn't in the original because it needed that sweetness.
Yeah, it was.
The first time it wasn't sweet enough. It was more citrusy, acidy.
Right. And this time, I mean, it didn't taste sweet. It just tasted balanced. Like, you didn't say, oh my goodness, this tastes like sweet steak.
Right.
It just tasted good.
And then instead of Italian seasoning, I combined some dried basil, oregano, rosemary, garlic, and onion powder.
That's pretty much Italian seasoning.
Yeah. And I did put the chipotle in there. You probably didn't taste it.
I didn't taste any.
Yeah.
You must have put it very little.
I put the half a teaspoon in.
Huh.
It was subtle enough that I think it just added that deep flavor, that deep smoky.
Interesting.
I might leave out the rosemary, because as much as I love the rosemary, and I tried to grind it into little bits, rosemary just doesn't want to, it always wants to be pine needles.
Yeah.
So I might have to leave it out next time, but I don't think it was a huge contribution to the flavor. One of the things I should have done was save the juice, the marinade, and simmered it down and use it as a basting glaze, especially since the honey was in it. That would have worked really well.
That would have been good.
Yeah. But so that's what we've been cooking.
We've been cooking a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, and today then after watching mass, I made some blueberry lemon scones.
Oh man, those
were
good.
Really good.
I got one half of one right here in front of me, or 1/4 of one. So apparently somebody else got 2/3 of it. So that's what we've been cooking. Hopefully we'll have some interesting stuff we make this week. Let's see. So let's move on to talk about what we've been reading and watching. You've been watching Emma.
Yeah, so, right. Not the new movie, because that cost way too much money. I just kind of looked at that and said, I don't want to watch it that much. but I found that the BBC series on BritBox, and I've been watching that with Romola. Oh, what's her last name? As Emma. I don't remember her name.
I'll have to look it up.
Anyway, I kind of nodded off in the middle of it, which wasn't necessarily a knock on the show. Just I was really tired last night.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I mean, Emma is my least favorite of Jane Austen's novels, because Emma's just, she's not a very likable character. I mean, the whole point is that she starts off as being sort of the kind of person who thinks that she knows better than everyone else, and she's very self-important, and she has to be taken down a few pegs. And I don't know, that's not my favorite kind of story. The protagonist who needs to sort of wisen up. But it's good.
Yeah.
It's really well done. And I like the miniseries format better than a movie.
Get time anyway to develop the
right
story. Yep. So what's the other thing? The other thing you mentioned, I don't know how to pronounce this name. It looks like Kiara.
Karis.
Karis. It's not spelled Karis. It's spelled C-H-A-R-I-A-S.
C-H-A-R-I-S.
I-S. Oh, okay. I mistyped it. So Karis and the World of Wonders. What's this?
Okay.
Is it a book, a movie?
It's a book.
Okay.
Karis and the World of Wonders. Well, Karis is the Greek word for grace.
Okay, yes.
Right. Okay. So it's a novel, a historical novel set in colonial Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And our protagonist is Karis, obviously. I'm about halfway through the book, maybe a third of the way through the book. I'm not sure. Haven't found out her last name yet. But as the novel opens, she and her family are under attack by Indians. They're living up in Falmouth, I think.
Down?
Falmouth?
Isn't on the Cape.
No, it can't be Falmouth then.
Okay.
Anyway.
Unless they're in Falmouth, Maine.
It might be Falmouth, Maine.
Because Maine was part of Massachusetts in colonial era.
Anyway, they're definitely north of Boston. So her family had previously lived in Boston. They'd moved out to a homestead, and her parents, her brothers, her aunts and uncles and cousins, like, they had a big piece of land. And she's a very educated young woman. She's studied Latin and Greek and Hebrew, and with her brothers. And her parents, her father obviously is well off, like a landowner, not a
farmer, digger in the dirt guy.
Right. And they
hires people to dig in the dirt.
Right. They have a couple of household slaves, and I'm not sure, they might have other farm workers too. Anyway, they're under attack by the French and Indians, and she, Caris, and her little sister her mother bundles them out the window and climbs down the tree and runs off into the woods.
This is the beginning of the book?
This is the beginning of the book. This is okay. Like the chapter one, everybody dies.
Okay.
And so Caris is left alone to make her way back to civilization through the woods. And now she's basically throwing herself on the kindness of strangers. And it doesn't, like, the plot itself doesn't sound like very, I mean, there's a little bit of excitement, obviously. But what really makes this novel good is just the interior life of the protagonist. She's an interesting character, and with a very rich, beautiful interior monologue. It's all told in first person, which I usually hate first person. I really hate first person.
Especially first person present.
But it works. And I think one of the reasons why it works is the novelist, the author, is a poet as well as a novelist. Marley Yeomans is her name. And it's not like overly done in terms of like every line feels like a overwrought poem, but there is a sensitivity of language, it feels like the language is beautiful without being overwrought. It's easy to read. It's not one of these like really hard to read books. But it's lovely. It's really just, it's captivating. It's beautiful. I really am enjoying this, and I have no idea where the novel is going. And that's kind of exciting, to just pick up a book and read it and not have any idea where it's going to go, how it's going to end. Is she going to get married? Is she going to have a family? Is she going to go off on some other adventure? I have no idea.
That's fun. I like being able to pick up a book and not know where it's going because I've read the blurb or someone has told me.
Right. Well, this is two different friends whose recommendations, whose opinions I value very highly, both suggested this book. And I've read some of Marley Yeoman's poems online and really enjoyed them. So I thought, I'll give it a shot. I was a little bit trepidatious because I'm thinking literary fiction can often really bog you down.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been wonderfully surprised.
Very good. So I've been watching a few things. I started watching the third season of Westworld. I've watched the first two episodes. It's so far less of naked robots sitting around. So that's good. Although the second one has more of those naked robots sitting around. But it suffers from the problem that a lot of these high concept shows have. These, you know, the ones that have 8 episodes every 2 years, it seems like, where so much happens and then it's so long before the next one, I kind of forgot like what happened in last season. And I'm like, wait, what's that? What is going on? Oh, that's right. At the end of the season, there was this huge thing about this thing where they all went to the thing. Oh, and then, oh, and that person did that. Like, I'm totally like, I feel like lost sometimes. Like, I don't know what's going on. And like, so you almost have to rewatch the season before you watch the new season. I don't know.
That's kind of how I felt with what was the show that frequently did that to me? Oh, it's gone.
In between seasons. It took a long time. Yeah. Game of Thrones did that. This one does it. Even other,
actually,
like,
Person of Interest kind of did that.
But even then, but that was only like 3 months, you know?
Right.
Imagine, it's been like over a year since the last season of Westworld, I think it was. And I'm watching it late, but yeah, it's very frustrating to watch these like this. And you know, you only get 8 episodes to figure things out again. By the time you figure it out, it's over. But, and who knows when the next episode will be. The other thing about it is it's so bleak. It's like this bleak future.
I have no interest in watching it. It sounds way too.
I'm not sure I'm going to watch the whole season, but if it continues in this vein, but it's very like, oh, the future is sleek and very technological and cool and awesome. And everybody is sad or a jerk or, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, I don't want that. So I'm not sure I want to watch the whole thing, but we'll see. I might give it another episode. I also watched another episode of a Netflix series called The Movies That Made Us. So I think I mentioned before watching the first one about Dirty Dancing. The second one is about the movie Home Alone, which is so great. It was one of the funniest movies I had ever seen. And this was a great behind the scenes look at it because it was a movie that should not have been a success. Their budget was $10 million, which even in 1990 was still a very small budget movie from a major studio. And they ended up pushing to get $14 million. They ended up having to move from one studio to another. They didn't have a big star attached. It was the main actor was a kid, you know, an unproven kid, Macaulay Culkin. And yet, it was one of the funniest movies. I remember watching this back in 1990 and laughing so hard.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't breathe.
It was hilarious.
Just the slapstick of the bumbling robbers outsmarted by the kid. It was just so good.
I mean, it's not usually my kind of movie, but I definitely remember loving it. And then it had those like moments of grace, like when he goes into the church
on Christmas Eve and the old man is there.
It's gorgeous. I mean, it's so surprising. And that moment of just beauty in the midst of the sad and the chaotic and everything, it kind of felt like, wow, this really gets what Christmas is about.
The director is Chris Columbus, who might be better known as later on directing the first 3 or 4, I think, Harry Potter movies.
Really?
Yes. Oh, he did the first ones.
Interesting.
So he
the ones I actually saw.
Yes, he loved working with child actors. He said that even at the time, he really enjoyed working with child actors. So that shows up in Harry Potter.
You can feel that, like that he really appreciates kids, likes
and
kids.
They like him. He has a rapport with kids. So that was good. They talked about how this really low budget movie somehow got John Williams to do the soundtrack. And before they had John Williams, the first edit was everyone was kind of like, eh, it's okay. And then John Williams comes in.
Of course, John Williams.
And does his magic and turns it into the most amazing movie. And it was number one at the box office for something like 12 weeks.
Wow.
From Thanksgiving past the new year. It beat out Rocky, one of the Rockies, 5, 6, 14, something. And it's made like $1 billion over the years.
Wow.
It's a $1 billion movie. This little movie.
It's kind of hard to believe.
Yes.
I mean, I liked it.
Yeah.
And I still think fondly of it. Like when I see it, I think, wow, I bet the kids would like that. We should probably show it to them sometime.
Yes. And we're totally going to do an episode of Secrets of Movies and TV Shows on it. But it's going to be near Christmas.
Well, yeah,
it has to be. It's a Christmas movie. So we have to do it around Christmas. I don't know if we'll do it this year in 2020 or next year in 2021, because I also want to do Die Hard, which is also a Christmas movie.
Couldn't you do both? Why not both?
The meme. Why not both? OK, we'll see. We'll see. I don't want to overstay because I also want to do a Christmas on a favorite. We did favorite Christmas movies. I think we did favorite Christmas specials. I had another Christmas related idea, but maybe I'll do Home Alone and Die Hard. OK, you got me. So that was really good. I'm looking forward. There's one on Ghostbusters, which I should have watched before I did the Secrets of Movies and TV Shows on Ghostbusters, but mea culpa.
This is the behind, what's the theme of
the movies
series
that made us.
The movies that made us.
So it's movies for people of my generation.
Right.
Who, you know, the Gen X who were watching movies of that era. So there's, and I forget what the fourth one is, but so there's only 4 episodes so far.
But they're still making more.
I would hope so, because they're a lot of fun.
And this is Netflix?
Netflix.
Okay.
It's a follow-up to another series they did called The Toys That Made Us, which is about the toys we had as kids. So which I haven't seen, but I've heard good things about. I kind of enjoy those. Do you remember there was a Food Network series a while ago that looked at the, it talks about like all the foods, the packaged foods that we buy, like how Twinkies are made, you know, that sort of stuff.
Right.
Oh, I forget what it was called, but it was hosted by this guy who was always in a candy shop in the beginning, you know, Twizzlers or more like candies we had when we were kids. Anyway, it's got that sort of nostalgia feel to it, which is a lot of fun. So that's what I've been watching. And then reading, I finished a book from The Saga of the Iron Dragon, it's called. And this was, I think it was a Jeff Miller recommendation. It is a series of novels. So I was reading the first one. Book one is called The Dream of the Iron Dragon. Imagine, if you will, mankind's future out into the stars. We have ventured forth from Earth into the stars several hundred years from now, but we've encountered this alien species who is intent on wiping us out. And in fact, they've already turned Earth into a cinder. It is uninhabitable. And mankind is on the verge of being defeated by this enemy out in the stars. We're holding on just a few worlds left. This planetary survey team out on the edge, the fringes of space, looking for a new place for it to call home, acquires what could be a weapon that could save humanity. But on their way home, something bad happens and sends them back to 10th century Earth, where their ship is broken and they have to repair the ship on 10th century Earth using whatever they have there. And they end up with Vikings. And living with Vikings and trying to survive with the Vikings while trying to figure out how to get back to Earth, get back to humanity in 800 years or whatever it is.
It sounds a little bit like Iflheim, except in Iflheim, there were aliens who were stranded on Earth trying to get back.
Right. Not time traveling.
Trying to repair their ship so that they could get back to their alien planet.
Yeah.
But they were stuck in medieval Europe. So similarity, space travelers in medieval Europe.
Well, what's fun about this is they have to recreate technologies using what's available and their knowledge. So they recreate muskets from we need a bunch of latrines because we need the saltpeter and we need sulfur. And, they have to get this, they make gunpowder, and then they figure out how to roll iron into musket barrels, like the whole thing. They
in Iflheim, they have a scene where the aliens need some wire. So they have to find a metalsmith who can draw wire long enough and fine enough.
Yes.
And in fact, the wire isn't fine enough.
Right. At one point, they encounter Ragnar Lothbrok, who is the character from the Vikings, who is a real legendary character. No one's quite sure whether he's real, but also King Harald, who was the real character. They make an enemy of King Harald. And in history, King Harald was the first king of Norway. He succeeds. He lives. So they're like, we can't kill him. We'll change history. Or can we? Or will history prevent us from killing him? Or, as I think might be the case in this, they've created a branch in history. You know, so the branching theory of time travel. Time travel's a lot of problems. Anyway, first book, it was fun. I kind of liked it. The couple of twists and turns to it, some unexpected things. Well, yeah, I'd say unexpected. And some interesting things that they have to deal with. No one speaks English, you know what I mean, like at the time.
Do they have a way of communicating? They end up
communicating because some of the Vikings speak whatever they speak in what we call England now. Okay. The old English.
Old English.
And there are a lot of words that are quite close.
Not that many.
There are enough. No is nicked, or night is neat, knit, something like that. There are a lot of words that sound, and then there's a lot of pointing at things.
Right. And, mostly pointing.
Right. But then they realize, of pointing things, oh, that sounds a lot like, you know, horse can harvest or whatever, you know, it was there's similarities in a lot of the words.
Right.
Grammar is way different, but. Yeah. But they're there also there for over, by the end of the first book, more than a year. So they've begun to acquire language skills together. So it's good. It's good. Apparently it was a Kickstarter project. Like the author funded it on Kickstarter, the writing of it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what gets funded on, I mean.
How did, like, what was the funding of it? I don't know. Yeah. Like I don't know how you fund a book on Kickstarter.
I'm fascinated.
You basically have
that.
Patrons who are kind of, I'll pay you to write this book and then I will get a copy when you're done, or I'll get whatever benefits from it accrue.
I mean, I guess that's, yeah. I mean, do you pay enough that you can quit your job so you can write the book? Is that, I mean, that's the idea?
I don't know. I mean, he raised $10,000.
So that's not really enough to live on for very long.
I think it was enough to be an incentive to have as a part-time job, I guess. I mean, the guy is a professional writer anyways. He is a real author. He has a bunch of books that he published. So I'm going to guess that in the third book, they actually do launch a spaceship. The goal now is to build a spaceship using whatever they can find in medieval Europe.
Otherwise, if they can't do this, then they're stuck on medieval Europe.
Well, not only are they stuck,
Earth,
which
forever?
They'd probably be fine, yes. But the humanity is doomed.
Right. Because the aliens.
The aliens are coming. So it was good. It was good. Well, I've moved on to another book, which is, it takes place. It's sort of a spy novel set in a science fiction setting, future setting. So I'm moving on to that, and we'll talk about
science
fiction when I'm done.
Spy novel.
Yeah, it's really
interesting.
It's a cool concept, but I'll talk about that one next time, and I'll come back around to the saga of the Iron Dragon at some point. So that's what we've been reading and watching. So speaking of watching, we watched Mass again this morning. As of this weekend, this is Memorial Day weekend 2020, the Archdiocese of Boston had allowed parishes that were prepared to have Masses.
I wonder how many parishes actually did have Masses.
Well, as we saw a report online, Our Lady Comfort of the Afflicted over in Waltham, they had a Mass in the parking lot.
That Comforter of the Afflicted sounds kind of appropriate to having Mass.
It's comforting us, the afflicted. Yes.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know how many had Masses in their churches, but most parishes, and the Archdiocese said parishes start when you're ready.
Right.
And there's a whole list of.
No, there was no rush to open. You can, but you don't have to.
Right. And we've talked about, I think we talked about last week about the requirements to start up, but so they can start. Ours is not going to start doing public Masses till Pentecost Sunday, and we're probably not going to go right away.
We're
going to see this week. We'd love to go especially for Pentecost, because we missed the Easter and everything else too. So we'd love to go for Pentecost, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what's
involved. For one thing, we know already that everyone's going to have to wear a mask. I'm not sure that our kids are going to be able to do that. I mean, we have been wearing masks to go out to the store and stuff.
But our kids, just even making them take a mask in the car with us when we go somewhere.
We have some kids who won't even why are you making me take this thing? I don't want this thing.
Now, if it comes down to you either wear the mask or we don't go to Mass. Mass or mask?
I really honestly don't know how that will go. I mean, it's up in the air.
It is up in the air.
Seriously.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. We may end up in there, and then 15 minutes later, I'm taking them out to the car, a couple of them out to the car.
Right.
So to be in there for... Now, they did say that the Masses should be as short as possible while having an entire Mass. But I think Father Michael already is doing short Masses by having them only an hour long.
Yeah,
I think for a Nigerian, an hour is a short Mass.
Right. I mean, I love him, but I'm not so sure that short is really part of his vocabulary, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So we'll see.
We'll see how it goes.
I'm curious to know what the schedule is. Are they going to the Masses?
Right. What's the schedule?
Where?
How is the sign-ups going to be done? there's a whole lot of questions.
Right, because the Archdiocese was strongly suggesting that parishes...
They use sign-up genius or one of the something else like that, like some sort of like party sign-up thing.
But will our parish do that, or will they just do first-come, first-serve?
Right, which has very large, both Haitian and Cape Verdean communities, which I think lots of people who don't have computer skills. Right.
And even the people who come to... The English Mass, which is the one we go to, obviously.
Right. There are still quite a number of non-English speaking.
Right. There are a lot of people whose first language is clearly not English.
I mean, we know that because we talk to them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so how comfortable are our parishioners, our largely immigrant parish?
Community. Yeah. It's going to be tricky.
People with the tech
As we said before, Brockton, the town where our parish is in, is number two in the state for coronavirus cases, which in our state is number two in the country for coronavirus cases.
Is it two? So I thought it was like,
I don't know. It's up there.
Three.
And, well, it might be four, but it's up there. It's one of the, our county is one of the hardest hit counties in the country.
Right.
So our calculus is different. We've talked about that, but yeah. So all this goes into, are we going to go to mass?
We're not sure.
Yeah. But so we watched Cardinal Sean's Mass again, and we'll probably, if we don't go, we'll watch Cardinal Sean's Mass next week. But it was really nice because he talked about Ascension, given that in Boston, Ascension Thursday is still on Ascension Thursday.
Right.
That's a Holy Day of Obligation still.
Although this year, of course, it wasn't a Holy Day of Obligation because
nobody's
no
obligated
obligation
to go anywhere. Right. But he did talk about the Ascension, which was nice. And he told us the two things, the two commands Jesus left for us. Love one another as I have loved you. Go and make disciples of all nations. And I love that because I've always said, on all the time I've worked for Archdiocese or I worked in a parish, that parishes do not need to make mission statements because they already have them. This, love one another as I have loved you. Go and make disciples of all nations. Period. That's our mission. That's it in a nutshell. This is what we're supposed to do. How does Jesus love us? He dies for us. He lays down his life for us. And frankly, folks, I'm looking at all you folks on social media, not you, of course, the one who's listening to us right now, but all the rest of you Catholics out there, you're not doing such a great job of loving one another online and thereby making disciples of all nations. I mean, and I'm going to have to include myself in the past.
Maybe we.
Yes. Well, I've tried to do better in recent years, but in the past, I was susceptible to the being an arguer online, getting into debates of theology or politics or, you know, things that got rancorous and whatever. And occasionally my dander gets up again now when I try to rein it in. I'm Sicilian, you know, I plead guilty. But we've got to do a better job of loving one another online, because who's going to want to join the church where the people snipe at each other every day, all day? They snipe at their bishops all day. I mean, the bishops aren't perfect. They'll tell you that themselves. And I've had plenty of criticism of bishops. Come on, you know, the public flogging, like, oh, you want me to join your church, and yet your leaders, according to you, are all idiots. It's like, why would I do that? To join our church where we love one another. Hey, you jerk. Rah! You know, I really feel like this. Especially now, especially that people are all, you know, messed up with the virus lockdown stuff. We're all jangly. We got to pay more attention to this than ever. So that's my thought about it. Did you have anything?
What grabbed me was Cardinal Sean talking about Jesus's two farewell messages. There was the Last Supper. And then the Ascension.
Right.
And I sort of liked the framing of it as the today's first reading and the gospel were Jesus's goodbye statements, his farewell parties.
Like George Washington's farewell address?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. The Cardinal called them farewell parties, like retirement parties. You know, this get up and give a speech, get speech, speech, speech. And Jesus got up and gave a speech.
Right. I don't know. That it struck my fancy.
Yes,
I don't have anything profound to say about it, though.
I kind of wanted to sing, you know, Jesus Christ is going home. You know, like, you know, George Washington's going home from Hamilton.
Yeah.
You think it would have made a better hymn than the one we sang? Brothers, I'm sorry, neighbors, all are we?
Oh, that was on when we were watching our parish's live stream.
We watched Cardinal Sean for the mass, and then afterwards we watch our parish's live stream, which is longer, and the kids won't sit still for that, and it's later. But they have music at our parish.
I put on the live stream in the kitchen while I was making scones.
Yeah. It's nice to hear Father Michael's homily and to just hear him. Right. And he does announcements at the end of the mass, too.
Yeah, I didn't hear the whole homily, but I heard part of it. He was talking about the prodigal son.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I missed the first part of his homily, how we got from today's readings to the prodigal son and the father running out to meet him.
Yeah.
But it was really nice.
Yeah.
What I heard.
We were kind of talking about the "Let There Be Peace on Earth," how it's been changed. The lyrics have been changed over the years to be more PC and all that. But so I was thinking, "Jesus Christ is going home" in the Hamilton style would have been nice, don't you think? No,
no, that's a big no.
No,
I mean, I love Hamilton, but
not as a hymn.
No,
Okay, no. All right. Let's wrap it.
You're being silly.
Yes, it's late and I'm getting silly. So we should wrap it before I make a spectacle of myself. We do want to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Aaron L., Morgan N., Jacob K., Richard L., and Alexandra S. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets in all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So if you have any feedback on our discussion, anything you want to let us know or suggest or ask further clarification on, you can do so by commenting at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And I'll put links to the things we discussed on our show notes at sqpn.com. You can write a review, and we really, really do appreciate it if you could write a review. We've had a few. We haven't had any lately. But if you could just take a couple moments and go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from and write a review, that helps us attract new listeners and grow the audience, which is really great. And if you could share the podcast with folks that you might think would enjoy it, share it with your friends. Help us grow this community. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.